Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome to the podcast Dr. Josh Smith. Dr. Smith serves as senior pastor of MacArthur Boulevard Baptist Church in Irving, Texas. He is a fourth-generation Baptist preacher, a graduate of Liberty University, as well as Southeastern and Southwestern seminaries. Josh and his wife, Andrea, have five children, four daughters, and a son. Josh, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Well, thanks so much. Excited to be here.
Well, good to have you here, and looking forward to a conversation today on the topic of preaching through suffering, and a topic with which you are well acquainted and you've had to learn these past three-plus years. And So I look forward to getting into that and learning from you and also positioning you to teach those who listen to the podcast regularly. Before we get into that, just orient us a touch to your ministry and kind of your story and what the Lord's doing in your life here lately. Just to tee you up for this, you are a fourth-generation preacher. Your father, Dr. Bailey Smith, is a well-known personality in Southern Baptist life and a well-known evangelist. So just anyway, I don't want to steal your thunder. Tell us your story a bit. Orient the listeners to your life and your calling.
Oh, that's great. God was really gracious allowing me to be raised in a home with some men I really love and respect, uncles, brothers, my dad, great men of God who were preachers. My mom was very careful to make sure I didn't feel pressure to be a preacher. So she pushed me towards everything else, although later told me that she knew when I was born that I would be a preacher. So really felt the call to ministry towards the end of high school, thought I would be a missionary, but really sensed God's favor when I preached and felt a gifting towards that. Others seemed to affirm that, so went into preaching, fell in love with the local church and seminary while I was on staff at First Baptist Durham, and decided to that pastoral ministry was the way for me. So I have been at MacArthur Boulevard, just finished 10 years in an extremely diverse community, ethnically diverse, and just had a lot of just a great ministry there. I've really enjoyed my time there.
And so 10 years, that's quite a stretch. And man, praise God for that, for your faithfulness there. MacArthur Boulevard Baptist Church, tell us about it. I know you've mentioned the diversity. We've talked about that before, but what's God doing in the congregation these days?
Yeah, it's a great church. I'm encouraged by God's grace in allowing me to be there 10 years. The church has existed for 60 years. I'm the longest tenured pastor they've ever had in the 60-year history of that church. It's a great place filled with great people. Like I said, very diverse church. We have a large Muslim population there in North Irving. The predominant religion in our community is Hinduism. We have a lot of people who've moved from South India primarily to live there. And so ministry there is slow. It's complicated. It's not anything I really feel like I know how to do well, but we're figuring it out. And we've built the ministry on just loving people, being faithful, a lot of community outreach, a lot of evangelism, and just faithful, consistent 10 years of preaching. We're seeing progress. We're really, really thankful.
And you and your wife, Andrea, five children, four daughters and a son. So
yes.
What are their ages now?
So my oldest will be 12 this week, and then I've got a 10, a 6, a 4, and an 11-month surprise, a great surprise there.
The son.
Yes, the son. I have four daughters. I tell people it only took me five tries. So
that's right. That's yeah. Right. Well, praise God for that. Well, listen, we're here today to talk about preaching through suffering, and a topic I tread into with some degree of hesitancy, because I know in one sense that so many listening to this podcast, that they long for a conversation about this, mm-hmm. because they are suffering, they have suffered, they shall suffer. So this is a topic we really need to broach, we really need to talk about. At the same time, it's a topic that many people are hesitant to talk about. They don't want to acknowledge their suffering. They don't want to acknowledge a season of trial. They want to appear that everything is on the up and up and everything's going great. And to even acknowledge that they want to have a conversation on preaching through suffering, perhaps they perceive as being weak or being a topic that exposes them to being too vulnerable or something. Mm. It's a topic that for you, I want to draw you into, and I know from knowing you that there's probably a touch of hesitancy as well, because you don't want to sound as though you've conquered this thing or you've learned from it and you've mastered it and now you're ready to dispense your wisdom. But at the same time, it is your story, what God has done in your life and your family's life these past 3 years and the circumstances you've come through in the leading the church through this massive storm. And so I think there are some lessons there that we need to hear. So why don't you just take a few minutes and paint with broad brushstrokes what the suffering has been for you and your family, the trial and trials, really three different trials, but it kind of comes together in one big trial. what those have been, and give us a sense of your ministry context these past 3+ years.
Yeah, so on July 11th, 2013, we did what so many others probably listening to this podcast have done, and that's sit in a little dark room filled with computer monitors where they show us a massive tumor and tell us that my wife has cancer. She was 34 at the time, extremely athletic, ate organic foods, did all the things you're supposed to do, and it was a huge surprise. So she had stage 4, diffused large B-cell lymphoma cancer, and was really shocking. At that point, we had 4 pretty small kids. Our youngest was just over 1 year of age at that point. Really shocking. So we went through 600 hours of chemo infusion, 26 rounds of radiation, 1 major surgery. It was about a year-long process.
So a year-long process. And the chemo wasn't just any old chemo. What was that like?
Yeah, so the way it worked is that she would get 5 days of 24-hour infusion. So she would go in the hospital. They would give her chemo for a day. They would send her home with a backpack that every 12 seconds infused chemo into her body, and she would have 5 days of continuous infusion, take 2 weeks off, and then do it again. So this wasn't where I could just go with her to the doctor and we'd spend a day and then we'd go home and get about our lives. Those weeks, which we had 6 of those, were just all consuming. I mean, it was a very difficult, she couldn't, had to be careful picking up the kids, you know, the pick line couldn't come out. I had to have to wrap her arm when she wants to take a shower to make sure that it didn't get wet. I mean, it's just a really long, difficult process.
And your parents live in Atlanta, Georgia.
Right.
You guys were in Irving, Texas. Mm-hmm. They're in the broader DFW Metroplex area. Mm-hmm. Your wife's family, where are they?
They're in Atlanta as well.
So they're in Atlanta.
Her dad is a pastor of a Christian Missionary Alliance church, and a lot of family was really helpful. I think just her family was more involved just because it's Andrea, and she wanted her mom and dad there. So her mom spent about 100 days at our house during this time, was incredibly faithful and helpful. We don't have any family around. My brother was not too far, but they had a lot of things going themselves as well. But our family was really helpful during that time. But it was hard not being around people. The church helped us a lot. I could talk more about that. The church really modeled how to take care of a pastor when he's suffering.
Yeah, I want to come back to that in a few moments. But back to kind of the storm itself. So mm-hmm. 1 year of chemo, of all the fatigue that goes with that, mm-hmm. and all the side effects that go with that, and you're trying to be a husband to her and encourage her and lead her. You're trying to be a father to 4 young children and engage in a level of paternalistic care mm-hmm. that no doubt was quite intense given your wife's infirmity. So what was that like being, I'm sure at moments, feeling like a single dad to 4 young children?
Well, I joked that I feel like I'm a pretty good dad. I'm a horrible mom. And right. I was filling some of that role, which was difficult. I mean, it was really hard. And you don't know in a moment like that how your children are dealing with it. It's hard to read them very well. I remember about 6 months after my wife finished her chemo, I am walking around the neighborhood pushing a jogging stroller with our 4-year-old at that point. And she just out of the blue said, I've decided I don't want to be a mom. I said, well, why is that, Josie? She goes, because I don't want to have cancer. Mm. Well, she's the one that I thought was not really figuring out what was going on. And all of a sudden you realize there's a lot going on there. So it was tough. It was exhausting. And, the difficulty with caregiving is the one that has the cancer certainly has it much worse. But at the same time, caregiving is really exhausting. You know, people in your church and my church that are caring for people who are sick. And it's a long and difficult road. And God was really gracious. But it was a taxing year.
So July of 13, you embark on this journey. You find out your wife has stage 4 cancer, a massive regimen treatments that takes place. Mm-hmm. And towards the end of that was kind of wave 2 of the trial
right.
that hits you personally. So what was that and when did that begin?
Yeah, I entered into a time of, it started with just physical suffering. So I was having just chronic stomach problems. I mean, brutal. Like you get the worst stomach bug you've ever had, and I was getting it 2 times a week, and it was really debilitating. After walking through that and still trying to pastor for about 6 months, I got really discouraged. It's like we talked about in Psalm 13, this unrelenting suffering. You get discouraged, and so I got really emotionally down. I think I tried to hold it together really well when Andrea was sick, and then she got done, and I kind of tanked. So I went through a really dark place emotionally that I think was more a result of holding it together when she was sick and then just my persistent sickness as well.
So when did if you were to date your persistent sickness, when did that really begin to show
well,
up?
Well, in November, I can tell you exactly, November 11th of 13, Andrea's last round of chemo, I got really sick with what I thought was just a stomach bug. What I didn't realize is that type of nausea and sickness was going to persist for about 2.5 years. Mm. And it got to where it really was debilitating. And I went to every doctor and they said, well, it's stress induced. Well, I knew that, but I didn't know what to do. And then I think just out of that got really discouraged. And the church began to notice, they asked me to take some time off. And I said, you're right, I need to take 2 or 3 weeks. And they said, no, you need to take it about 3 months. And I checked out and really came back after that and still didn't feel great. I mean, I didn't want to pastor, I didn't want to preach. And anybody who's been through a time of discouragement like that will know what it's like to genuinely not want to do any of the things you normally wanted to do.
So talk about the transition or how it morphed from the physical pain to the emotional / spiritual discouragement. And what was the timing on that? What was that like?
Yeah. So, November of 13 started to get a lot of physical sickness. I think what happens when you have, I've walked through this with so many families in our church, when you have a persistent sickness, particularly when you can't identify it, you don't know what it is, you just get really down. And then when it happens, you think, well, maybe I'm doing something wrong. Maybe it's something I should be able to deal. And then they tell you, well, it's stress related. Well, then you feel guilty because you can't handle your stress. And it's just this horrible cycle. And your mind starts doing all kinds of crazy things. And so when you just don't feel well day after day, it takes an emotional toll. And I think people that go through a difficult moment don't expect the emotional toil that a physical sickness takes on you. And so that got really difficult. So towards, I would say, the summer of 2014, I had just gotten to where I didn't want to go to work. I didn't want to preach. I was getting up and preaching, but I didn't want to. I didn't want to do anything.
How were you sleeping?
I wasn't very well. It would take me a long time to go to sleep. When I would go to sleep, I wouldn't sleep well. I would go out to exercise because everybody told me I needed to exercise, but I didn't feel good. So I don't want to exercise when I don't feel good. It just got to be long, and I really got in a darker place than I've ever been. And I've heard people describe this, and I don't know if it was just burnout or depression or whatever, but it was an unusual place. I did not know how to navigate it.
So when did you begin to come out of that? And then I'm wondering how that parallels with the physical challenges of your daughter and mm-hmm. when those began to show up.
Yeah. So emotionally, I think I started to turn a corner. I took some time off, and then I would say beginning of 2015, so it probably lasted about a year, I started to come around a little bit, feel like I was getting some strength and energy back. Physically, 2015 was an awful year for me. I mean, I felt bad most of 2015 and a few months into 16. But at the same time, I was getting hopeful. I was encouraged. I remember the beginning of 2015 feeling encouragement, which I hadn't felt for a long time, just feeling like I think I can do this and I want to go to work and I want to preach, and which was something, you know, I always tell people that I preach. I don't do anything else. Like, I have no other skills. People say, what would you do if you weren't preaching? I have nothing else. And so when you don't want to preach, it's scary. You don't know what else you're going to do. But you know, I tell people, hold on, it comes back and the Lord restores you. And he was gracious to restore me after that. 2015 was still just difficult. I was looking back just about 2 weeks ago in some of my journals and reading about how despondent I felt in 2015 because of physical sickness. I mean, I would have a great week, and then all of a sudden Saturday I would tank, and I would have to call my brother in the middle of the night and say, I need you to preach in the morning. And recounting some of that, I was actually surprised at how really down I even still was by some of the physical stuff last year.
And so you have your wife's great cancer trial, you have your own physical trial that morphed into a broader emotional spiritual discouragement, and then the situation with your daughter. When did that show up?
Yeah, this was probably March, April of this year, and this is not, I would say this situation by itself would not have been that bad. But I think following after 3 years of other stuff, it was really hard for me. She had this autoimmune disease called HSP. It's a horrible thing where your legs basically become covered in large blood blisters and boils. She couldn't walk for a few weeks, didn't finish the last 2 months of school, was really hard, really persistent. She and I, out of all my daughters, she's the only one that looks like me. We have kind of this little special connection. And so she wanted me a lot during those times. And I'm the one that was at the hospital with her and trying to navigate this. This is something that generally you suffer a lot for about a month, 2 months, and then it goes away. Hers persisted for 4 or 5 months, a lot longer than we ever thought. And again, it's just, if that would have been the only thing, it would have been fine. But I was just pretty ticked off after this last one.
And I guess, you feel as though, well, we're sort of paid up.
I mean,
we've paid our dues on suffering.
Right.
My wife's challenge is mine. And And now my daughter's challenging. And so you roll that up, it makes for 3.5 years of significant challenge at every level, not only affecting your wife and you, a child, not only physically, emotionally, spiritually. And so what do? You talked about some, the church's kindness to you, but just kind of speak and share, you know, experientially, autobiographically, how you preach to that season. And a part of the canon says some of you didn't. You had your brother, Stephen, a great preacher, professor of homiletics at Southwestern Seminary, and a good friend of mine who filled the pulpit for you on many occasions. Mm-hmm. And so some of it's just even acknowledging what you can and can't do, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But just unpack for us what that was like, how you navigated that season.
In God's providence, at the beginning of 2014, I think it was, I preached through the book of Ruth. I don't know why. I rotate between Old Testament and New Testament. I wanted to do something that wasn't extremely long, so I picked Ruth, and I immersed myself in it. I had no idea how much that would encourage me. Oh, my word. The book of Ruth just deeply encouraged me, and it was almost exactly what we were going through. I remember one of the sermons I preached when I was thinking about Ruth and Naomi and Ruth 1 and then going into Ruth 2, and I came to this conclusion that sometimes the most spiritual thing you can do is just hang in there. You're just holding on. And I really felt like a lot of this season was just hang in there. I tell that to people. It doesn't sound very spiritual, but I tell that to people all the time when they're suffering. You know, God will encourage you, and you will make progress, and you won't see it quickly, but over a long period of time, you're going to see the progress. And there is no promise that you're going to make it out of this trial alive. You may or may not, but the reality is that we persevere. I think it's just a way to say persevere, hold on. And so I think a lot of it was that, just hanging in there, day by day, moment by moment, trusting the Lord's grace sufficient for the day. So I think that was a lot of it. One of the lessons I learned is that I'm human. I embracing my own weakness and realizing that I'm not as strong as I thought I was. I'm not as invincible as I thought I was. And the Lord really used this to break me of probably a lot of pride and make me realize that I'm human. You know, I was speaking to some of your Accelerate students last night, a really sharp group of young students, and one of the things I was telling them is that I realized through this suffering that everybody that you preach to is hurting to some degree or another. One of the things I heard a lot is people would come to me for counseling and they would start by saying this, I know what I'm going through is nothing compared to what you're going through, but I need to tell you something. And what I would tell them is it doesn't work that way. If it's tough to you, it matters. And it's tough. It matters to God. It matters to you. It should matter to me. The reason we have to weep with those who weep is because there are a lot of times people weep for something that we don't think is worthy of weeping over. So we have to enter in. And so I think I just realized every single person has something. There's something hard for them. And although it might not seem significant to you, it's significant. And there's a lot of people that have suffered a lot worse than our family has. But everybody's hurting and it's hard. So Andrew and I made a commitment when we first started this journey that we were just going to be real. It was the greatest really thing the Lord allowed us to do. So we found out she was sick. We found out what she had. I preached the next Sunday. That was in July of 2013. The message is out there called Absolute Surrender. It's on Vimeo. It's gotten thousands of listens. But I was just a broken man. I wept through that message and talked about how God had prepared me for this moment. And as I got honest, I realized that everybody was hurting. So I think the main thing I learned is just as a pastor suffers and is able to acknowledge the good, the bad, the ugly of suffering, it starts to open up in the hearts of people just the opportunity to be able to share how they're suffering.
Yeah, I would suppose it moves you from being one who can express sympathy to one who can truly empathize with the church.
Yeah.
I want to go back to preaching especially, and I'm curious about the pulpit ministry. What role did the pulpit ministry itself play in your trial? Meaning, was it something that helped to pull you out of it, or conversely, was it something that just added another layer of heaviness and weight that seemed to compound the challenges?
Right. There was a balance. So, you know, you want to be careful in preaching not to focus the sermons on yourself. And there's some really important cautions there. Every illustration does need to be a personal one. You don't need to bring every message back to your own experience. Yet, here is a church that is watching, you know, Josh lose weight at a rapid race. At a rapid pace, his wife come to church bald. I mean, they're noticing, it's real, it's out there. Mm-hmm. They're watching this journey, so they're feeling it too. And I think what I discerned is, in my preaching, I wanted to preach the text primarily, but be real and be honest in the way in which the text is dealing with me. So I think, like I said, in God's providence, preaching through Ruth allowed me to talk about what God was teaching me, my own personal suffering, and realized that when a pastor suffers, the church, it's not just for him, it's for the church. So a pastor has to be willing to talk honestly and openly about that suffering, because it's not just for me. God wanted to teach the church something. Anytime a leader suffers, it's for the rest of the people. So God taught me to, in the preaching, to continue to preach the text, yet at the same time to be really as honest about how I'm feeling and what's going on as I possibly could. And I think that was a really helpful thing to do.
And as far as the study, the preparation of the sermon, again, I'm curious, was that in a sense therapeutic? Did that help mm-hmm. you? Or again, was that a weight, a burden that you felt, man, this is hanging on me?
The answer is yes. So the greatest thing our church did, when Andrea got sick, the church came to me and said, we don't want to see you for 6 months. Well, I said, can I modify that? Can you let me preach when I want to preach, but not preach all the time? So we have a young guy on our staff, Ricky Primrose, phenomenal preacher. My brother Stephen Smith was willing to preach anytime. When Andrea first got sick, we were going through the Sermon on the Mount. So I would just decide, hey, this is a non-chemo week. I'm going to preach. And frankly, being able to get out of the house, get to the office, immerse myself in a text was incredible for me. Mm-hmm. I needed that. Now, the weeks that Andrea was in chemo, I was 5 days a week at the hospital all day with her. So that wasn't an option. So it was good to be able to have guys to fill in. But no, it became a really helpful thing to me to be able to immerse myself in a text and to minister to others and to encourage others through that.
Now, the local church itself, your congregation, what role did the church play mm-hmm. in your season of trial? Mm-hmm.
They gave me freedom. So the freedom to be able to preach when I wanted to preach, do what I wanted to do, but not have to do everything. They gave us space, but at the same time really loved on us. So I talked to a friend of mine a while back whose child was suffering from a very serious disease. And this guy told me some stories about how some men in his church really gave him a hard time for how much time he's spending ministering to his child and not enough time on the church. And that's a horrible thing to hear. And our church really modeled this well, of really letting me do what I needed to do, but not have to do more than I needed to do, because it was a hard season with four small kids. So they really were kind to us, were gracious, and allowed us to really do what we needed to do. They took a young lady on in the church. They put her on the payroll and basically said, you can use her as much as you want to use her to babysit, to help around the house. I mean, just practical things. They provided for us meals. They loved on us really well, and they prayed for us, which is the most significant thing. And they supported us. They were empathetic. They were patient. They were kind. They didn't have too many expectations of me during those days. And I think that was the big deal, because as a pastor, you do feel the weight of the congregation. To be able to have the congregation say, hey, for a season, don't feel that weight. You take care of your family was the greatest gift they could have ever given us.
So let me ask one final question here, and thank you for the conversation and for your own transparency in the course of this podcast. What do you say to the pastor who is in a pronounced season of trial, perhaps as physical, either himself or his wife or a child, as you alluded to a moment ago, or perhaps it's something in the congregation itself, and a contentious board of elders, a contentious body mm-hmm. of deacons, a contentious segment within the church that's making his season of ministry a grind? What do you say to that person that they are in this great season and they don't have a church that's rallying around them, supporting them? They don't have the congregation. Not only are they not a source of support, in fact, they're actually having the total opposite effect. What do you say to that pastor?
Yeah, a lot of things. I mean, I think, first of all, be real. You know, there is a sense into which some guys communicate what's really going on in their life, and the church doesn't respond well. I mean, I told the church how I was struggling with what I felt was a deep period of depression, and I remember saying to our church, if I'm going to just talk about this on a Sunday night, if you want to come and hear, you can hear. It was a special night service. Well, we had 300 people show up to hear me talk about it, and I realized everybody's struggling with this. So I think honesty is a big part of that. I think just persevering. When I say the most spiritual thing you can do sometimes is hold on, I really mean that. You know, we put so much pressure on ourselves as pastors to always be making progress, 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 progress. And sometimes you genuinely just have to hold on. You've got to hang in there. You've got to make it today. You've got not to worry about the 5-year plan, the 10-year plan. You've just got to make it through today and realize that God is doing something in your life, purposeful. He is using you, and he may be preparing you for something he has for you in the future, but you literally just have to hold on. You've got to put some of the big dreams, the big visions aside, and you have to say, you know what, I got to do what I'm supposed to do today. Be faithful, persevere, hang in there. Remember that sanctification is a long and slow process, and you trust the Lord in it, and you realize you're probably making more progress than you realize you are, and you just honestly, you just hold on. And for a guy like me who's so driven, who wants to always see things moving forward, that's a hard place to be. I'm not a just hold on guy. But in those seasons of suffering, you really get to a place where the Lord, I think, just says, just be faithful. Just do what you got to do today, and don't worry about anything else. And I think in that midst, God will really bring some encouragement, and he'll speak to you. And man, my Bible is filled with little dates all along when God gave me little words here and there, just that's what I needed that day. And he gave me another one the next day, and I was literally holding on moment by moment. But I'm here 3 years later, and better for it. Honestly, better for it. And I would say that too. God will redeem this. God, what he does is redeem suffering. This is what God does. He's always done it. He's still doing it. I'm a testimony of it. And that's a great thing to know.
Josh, and that's also a great point to end on. Thank you so much for your faithfulness, the Lord's grace in your life, and for you hanging on and your willingness to share your story in the course of this podcast. I know there are many listening who will be profoundly encouraged by it. So thank you for your faithfulness.
Thanks, Dr.
And thank you for joining us on Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, please visit my website, jasonkallen.com.